First movement, the natural soundscape. So here I am, sitting on the wooden bench halfway through the swamp. I've decided to place the mic on the earthy path under the trees next to the boardwalk this time, so I don't have to be as careful not making any noise as last night, and also because I hope that there will be more birds closer to my recording gear that way. I'm not fully awake yet, though conscious of my surroundings, as part of me still lingers in the realm of dreams. I recall the voices of the wind and the river that runs beneath my feet, but no, though the wind blows on the island, I will not get to record the creek that I used in my composition until I get to Nanaimo, hours away by car and bus, and almost a week from now, far behind the southernmost border of Namgis territory. Because Nimkish River, with its abundance of sockeye salmon that was before the industrial depletion of fish populations, mind you, used to be, and in spirit still is, the lifeline of the people, I feel it needs running water in this piece, even though I will find none on the island itself. The river slowly fading from our precog mind, and with the wind keeping a low profile, I now listen to the forest as it awakens from its nightly repose. The crows are the first to come alive, some distant, some closer to the recording position, and all around the place, making it evident that they, at this time of the year, are the dominant species in the sonic layer of the local ecosystem. Raven may still be the trickster lord of the spirit realm, but he's definitely not alone in the animal kingdom. Next to his croaks, a woodpecker knocks on a tree to startle some bugs to feed on, and a number of smaller birds, the names of which I do not know, claim their territory. I suspect starlings to be among the crowd. I wish I had the keenness of the Kalulu who Stephen Feld visited years ago, then I could attach names and meaning to their song. Instead, I couldn't even tell how they look like. I feel a bit stupid, but luckily I haven't come here for ornithological studies. A twig cracks nearby, and the birds are becoming lively. At the inhabited end of the island, there also seems to be some early bird as I can hear a car engine going off. As the sun rises above the trees, I turn to the stony beach. The nuthatch, that had accompanied me with its sharp, high-pitched short yelps for a time now, has to share the acoustic space with numerous seabirds, above all seagulls, but also some duck or goose-like critters. I have to admit that there is some layering going on here. At an audition of the completed soundscape I will arrange with some friends, one of them will remark that his idea of nature would be way more calm and relaxing. There isn't that much commotion going on in the woods, he'll say, and yes, he'll be right. I have to face the dilemma that if I play it out the right way, I will need too much time for the natural soundscape, time I do not have, because if I let the morning atma develop the way it really happens, many a listener, remember we're talking about a museum presentation as the initial target, might not wait for the end of it, because nothing's happening. So I layer up to 4 or 5 recordings taken on the same spot but at different times to get all the birds compressed into 2 minutes. That brings up yet another difficulty. In the quiet environment I'm recording in, I have to crank up the microphone preamps considerably, resulting in not only the sound signal to gain in volume, but also a rising noise floor caused by the analog components of the hardware, mainly of the microphone. It will be quite audible on the individual recordings already, and now imagine the effect of 4 layers of background static from 4 tracks huddling together in one place. I will take quite some effort in post-production to reduce that undesirable noise. To fully remove it would affect the signal sounds too much, and it would add lots of nasty MP3-like artifacts, so we'll have to choose for a compromise where both extremes will be more or less in balance. I admit I may even low-cut some passages in order to get rid of some faraway motor engine. I would not want to disturb the nature effect. Since nothing natural is going on in the frequency band removed, however, I don't feel bad about it. Another obstacle to deal with when recording in the open is wind, a nasty little bugger. The membranes that are supposed to vibrate in unison with the subtle periodical compressions and decompressions of the air that we perceive as sound waves are now jammed by unidirectional air movement and cannot react to the sound information anymore, resulting in a low-frequency rattle that cannot be removed afterwards. Of course, there are various forms of wind protection, but they all affect the frequency spectrum that arrives at the membrane. The better the protection, the bigger the frequency loss, especially at the high end. And even the strongest jammer cannot withstand an upright BC autumn storm. The second problem with wind is its credibility. It can sound beautiful when you're on location, seeing the trees, smelling the forest, feeling the chill on your face, and then, back in the studio, when you listen to it again, you ask yourself if you've really recorded genuine wind, or if what you're listening to is just static because you forgot to jack in the mic. Again, this calls for compromise when you wish your audience to believe you. I will choose for heavy filtering with a wah-wah effect to achieve this howling wind sound that we're used to from conventional Hollywood sound design, and let that crossfade into an unaltered wind recording in the hope that the letter then would be recognized as what it is. This method bears some resemblance to the common sound policy in film, where you rather work with conventions than with reality, as reality would fail to convince the audience. There is this beautiful example I always use when talking to my students about film sound aesthetics. When an airplane lands on a silver screen airstrip, you always hear its tires screeching once it touches the ground. Try that in your local airport. The engines will disrupt your eardrums long before you get close enough to hear any tires. But convention demands that screech. Once left out, the viewer or listener in the cinema will have trouble believing the plane has already landed. So the natural soundscape offers 1 or 2 challenges when it comes to make good recordings and afterwards to make people believe you, especially when you want to be authentic and entertaining at the same time. Luckily, there are also those takes where the wind held back. Now I have to wait for rain, as no BC soundscape can be complete without the constant rain that covers all the land and the sea with a veil of thin grey braids.